Welcome to Ouroboros Podcast, episode number 198. I am your host, Colin, coming to you from Bath. Yeah, I'm only two episodes away from episode 200. Slightly scary thought, but yeah, I have got something epic and annoying planned. And I'll probably be announcing exactly what that is next week. But for this week, it was the final episode of Doctor Who, so I've got a review of that. I've also had an avalanche of responses from something I talked about last week. I had the grand total of two people get in touch with me about something I talked about last week, so I'll be discussing that later in the show. But I think in the world of culture and technology, there's really only one story this week. So a lot of this episode is going to be taken up with an obituary. But of course, we've also got some great music. And let's kick that off straight away with Cy Avia. This is No Excuse.
Broken heart.
Cy Avia come from Antwerp in Belgium. And as you might expect with that very industrial electronica sounds, they're signed to the excellent Belgian record label Alpha Matrix. Although in that particular case, I got the album Eclectric direct from the band rather than from the label. Very cool stuff. And I also passed that on to Dave from the Inside Outcast, who played a track a few weeks ago, which featured as the guest vocalist Jean-Luc Demeyer of Front 242, who is one of the founders of EBM music. Very cool stuff, and I really like that kind of aggressive, yet still beautiful industrial sound of Cy Avia. The double album Eclectric is out now. And so we reach the end. It's the final episode of Doctor Who. And as usual, and in case you've forgotten or whatever, I'm not going to put the spoiler warnings up. By this time, if you want to, you will have had plentiful opportunities to watch it. Once again, the title of this episode is slightly misleading. After the bait and switch of the episode entitled Let's Kill Hitler, we have a slightly similar situation now with The Wedding of River Song. Because the wedding of the Doctor and River does happen in this episode, but it's kind of a throwaway moment, and in a lot of ways really not the point of the episode. It starts in a really cool place, with all of history starting at the same time. We have the Roman Empire never having fallen, Churchill Caesar is leader of the Holy Roman Empire, there are pteranodons attacking people in Hyde Park, airships are carrying modern minis, and Charles Dickens is being interviewed on the BBC Breakfast programme. It's kind of cool, kind of interesting, and a really good way of having a couple of previous guest stars show up again, having Ian McNeice back as Winston Churchill and Simon Callow back as Charles Dickens. It was very cool. But at the same time, a little bit messy, I think. While all this stuff is cool on paper, when you're thrown straight into it and without knowing exactly what's happened, it is a little odd. But having said that, it is so much fun that I'm willing to give it a lot of leeway. And when it's revealed that this whole thing of all time happening at once, and it always being the 24th of April 2011 at 5:02 PM, because of River deciding not to kill the Doctor, it's kind of interesting. River deciding not to kill the Doctor and causing all this issue with time is an interesting concept, but at the same time we know that the Doctor isn't going to actually die, because it's been confirmed there's going to be another season, so we're kind of waiting for the reveal of how the Doctor survives, rather than enjoying this tension of will history survive, will history repair itself once the Doctor dies. And there was also a very good point made on the Black Dog podcast by Darren, I think it was, who said that if all this is happening because somebody is alive who shouldn't be, then where are the Reapers from Father's Day in Series 1 of the new Who? Because in that case, Rose's father should have died and didn't, And because of that, the Reapers come and start killing everybody and excising the wound, so to speak. So if history is so damaged, then where are the Reapers? But granted, that was, what, 6 years ago, 7 years ago? It might not be the same situation, and I'm willing to give them a pass, but it is an interesting idea. I mean, if all this trouble has happened because River refuses to kill the Doctor, then surely the Reapers should show up. So into this bizarre world where everything is happening at once, the Doctor shows up as this seer and gets rescued by Amy, Rory and River, and gets taken by steam train to the pyramids at Giza, which had been turned into Area 52, which I thought was a quite nice touch. And there it's revealed that the reason all this is happening is because River refused to kill the Doctor, and also the fact that the eye patches that Madame Covarian and her cohorts wear is so that they can remember who the Silents are. And that's a really cool concept. I mean, obviously, it helps when Madame Covarian is just showing up at random points throughout the early stories, just showing up in Amy's dreams or whatever. It helps that Francis Barber is wearing an eye patch, so we know it's the same person. But for there to actually be a reason why she's wearing an eye patch, that was a very cool concept and one I didn't see coming. And speaking of the Silence's cohorts wearing eye patches, Mark Gatiss's guest spot as the prosthetic-covered live chess player was a complete waste of time. It was one of the bigger things that was promoted in the build-up to the episode, was Mark Gatiss in this strange get-up wearing the eye patch. And not only is the scene in which he appears rather pointless, it's also really not exciting. When you hear live chess, you expect to see something dramatic. You expect to see real people killing each other. At least that's what I expected to see. But instead we have these two people having this stilted conversation over an electrified queen, which makes no sense and is not visually or narratively interesting. So then we get the marriage with River and the Doctor just having a very brief ceremony with the Doctor's bow tie. It seems rushed, and I appreciate the fact that, like I said earlier, as with Let's Kill Hitler, it was kind of a bait and switch. I like the fact that it wasn't the focal point of the episode. But at the same time, for something that's been building up for so long, it did seem kind of rushed. And River's reaction towards the Doctor has pretty much gone from 0 to 60 in 0 seconds flat. 1 minute she's a psychopath trying to kill him, the next she is in love with him, and the next she wants to marry him. And this happens very, very quickly. And there doesn't really seem to be any reciprocal feeling on the Doctor's part. Only you could argue that he's an alien, he doesn't have those feelings. I mean, look at his reaction when Amy threw herself at him in the last series, at the end of Flesh and Stone. In which case, why is he bothering to marry River in the first place? This relationship has been built into the fabric of the last two series, and even further back into the past of Doctor Who. And yet it seems very one-sided, with River being the only one who really cares and really knows what's going on. And it also seems very rushed, as I said. It seems like the Doctor is mollifying River by doing this thing and saying, look, yes, we are married, but you still have to kill me because it's a fixed point in time. Which would have been a beautiful concept if there hadn't been the big red reset button. Now again, I've got to give credit to Stephen Moffat because my thought was that the doctor that died was a flesh doctor from the two-parter, the Rebel Flesh and the Almost People. But then it turns out that the doctor who dies is actually the Tesselector with the doctor inside. So I give credit to Stephen Moffat for having an alternative explanation for why the doctor dies, or why the doctor can die, and one that fits into the fabric of the series with the Tesselector having appeared in Let's Kill Hitler. But again, it seems kinda cheap. The Doctor dying is such a core thing of this series in particular, and even going back into the last series, with his emotional reaction saying goodbye to Amy and Rory, and his emotional reaction and wanting to go and see Craig again. It's sort of like deep, powerful emotional stuff. And then, oh, it's not the Doctor, it's a human-sized ship with the Doctor inside it. Oh, that's fine, we can all go on happily ever after. And yes, we need some reason for the Doctor to survive, and for what it is, I think this explanation works and is good. But everybody's dying too much. I've said in the past how often Rory has died, and Amy's even died kind of this season, and the Doctor has now died twice at the end of last series, at the end of this series. And while his death and resurrection were much better handled in The Wedding of River Song than in The Big Bang, it's still cheap. Moffat and the writers and the producers of Doctor Who don't need to keep on killing people just to induce dramatic tension. If you overuse it, it loses its impact. Having all this stuff about being dead and being resurrected for all the characters, it does lose its impact, and that is a problem. But despite the fact the reset button is cheap, it had to be done. So, whatever, I'm going to give it a pass. I really didn't like the very final scene. We know that this religious order called the Silence exists to stop the question being answered. And the implication from that very final scene is that the question that must not be answered is Doctor Who. Now, I have several problems with this. Firstly, it makes the Doctor far, far too important. It's the problem with the McCoy era of Doctor Who, with the Doctor being this almost superhuman presence in the universe. So the fact that this question is so important to Doctor Who just doesn't quite sit right. And the other problem I have with it is in the context of the series and the universe we inhabit when we watch Doctor Who, that question, Doctor Who, has never really come up. It's the title of the show, it's not the title of the person. It has never been Doctor Who, it has always been the Doctor. So that question, Doctor Who, only has resonance for us as an audience rather than the inhabitants of this world we are watching. Frankly, I found this question underwhelming, especially when it had been built up so much as the reason behind the silence. Although one thing I will say about this question is the fact that it looks like the Doctor's name is going to be something of an arc plot for next season. Now, as things stand with River Song and the Doctor, she doesn't know the Doctor's name. But we know that by the time the Doctor finally meets River in Silence in the Library, she does know the Doctor's name. So if the Doctor's name is such an issue for next season, perhaps that's why the River knows the Doctor's name and why she can use it to make the Doctor trust her. I think this is basically a roundabout way of saying that I don't think we've seen the last of River Song, even though her story has pretty much been told. Overall, I enjoyed the episode. I really enjoyed all the stuff about time existing all at once. There were some very interesting and funny ideas included in that. I really like the explanation for the eye patch. I thought it was a very nice touch. And I like the fact that the wedding of River and the Doctor wasn't a big deal, although I kind of like it to have been a slightly bigger deal. So overall, I give the wedding of River Song a B+. And I think in general, this series of Doctor Who has been pretty damn good. I wasn't a massive fan of Curse of the Black Spot, the pirate episode. I wasn't a massive fan of the Flesh two-parter, although it was necessary for the fact that Melody turns out to be Flesh. And I think that's kind of the problem with it. It was there purely to introduce the Flesh and how the baby gets kidnapped. I think The Doctor's Wife is one of the best episodes of Doctor Who since it's come back. I really enjoyed The Girl Who Waited as well. I thought it packed a real emotional punch. So the standard for this series has been very high. It is flawed. It's always flawed. But the flaws weren't massive, and I thought it was a really good, solid series. But I really, really hope that Stephen Moffat stops killing people. The next bit of music I've got for you is by Henrik Jose, who comes from Malmö in Sweden. And I'm not sure if those are his two first names or his first name and his surname, but this track comes off his EP, The Little Things, which is available for free off his website and also through the 23 Seconds Net label, which is based in Sweden as well. Nice piece of low-key, down-tempo electronica. Very beautiful sounding stuff. And I really like it. So, from Sweden, this is Henrik Jose with his track Pinpointing the Problem.
my mind. It could be all these things combined. There must be something I forgot. I feel I must have felt a lot. Please help me. I haven't been beyond this day. I really could have tried. I should have been beyond this day, but I haven't even tried. I haven't even tried. I'll never even try. I haven't been beyond this day, 'cause I'll never really try.
British Tunely music is remarkably old. Wasp waist and swivel hippie artists and kicking out the legs, girls and boys of both types, yes, from Johnny Groats in Bonnie Scotload to the end of the landing, are laying down fantastic old tunes all the tito, and knockers all on rotaty discus. Runny now, as light as quickening, on the surfload and into Webby to the Made in the UK show. At madeintheukshow.co.uk. Dig joy. Here, a multipod of UK cast poodles, in excited times all bubble happy, will bring you Freeload of Chargebold, the best and most bright shiniest of all the ivory tinkles and twangy G-strings with bang 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 on the big bass drummy that this fairy island has to offer nona. Remembold, madeintheukshow.co.uk. Goodly bye, load.
I'm a man in the workshop, won't stop. Luxury to the rich in need. Evening and night and daylight, fight and cry and sweat and bleed. Work all day and no play, gonna make me a household name. What is the question? Perfection, not necessary, very ordinary. Good celebrity endorsements, quality won't be important. Hearts and minds of the people, the product is totally evil. I don't care what you think about it, soon you won't be able to live without. Yeah. church and the steeple. Now all I need is the people.
And that was The Ladies of Sport, who come from Brooklyn in New York, with their track, The Product. Now, I've played tracks in the past which could be described as processed songs. And I've also played tracks with a slightly comedic bent to them. But I think that's probably the first time that I've ever played a track on this podcast which could be described as satirical. Its themes of consumerism and marketing are very biting if you pay attention to them. And it actually fits in very nicely with the next thing I'm going to talk about. The Ladies of Sport are a trio with two twin sisters of Japanese extraction and a man from New York who met up in Brooklyn and decided to make music together. Actually, thinking about it, it's a very similar setup to School of Seven Bells, who I've played in the past with the twin sisters plus a man. I think they were also from New York as well. But anyway, it's a very interesting sound, very quirky alt-pop, as they describe themselves. But it's got a bit of the 8-bit rock about it, you know, a bit of the chiptune influence in there, which is kind of unusual and kind of cool. I do really like that track. It sounds good, and it's also got a point, which is always a plus. The Ladies of Sport have an album out now called Empires Fall, and that track, The Product, is on it, and I think it's really cool. So, in the world of technology and the world in which I produce this podcast, there was really only one story this week. On Thursday morning, the news broke that Steve Jobs, the founder and CEO of Apple, had finally lost his battle with pancreatic cancer at the age of 56. It's an overused phrase that gets used when somebody dies, that they changed the world. And I think Steve Jobs is one of the very few people in the world who can claim to have fundamentally changed the way we live our lives. He was the first person in the early 80s to produce a computer which was ready out of the box. And for that, he would be easily remembered. But his fundamental legacy to the world, or rather his company's fundamental legacy to the world, is iTunes. What I'm doing now, podcasting, has only become possible and popular because of what Steve Jobs did. Think about how much the world has changed because of iTunes, and, by extension, the iPod. If there's one person who is responsible for the death of the music industry, or the death of the traditional music industry, it is Steve Jobs. Under his leadership, iTunes exploded, and his developments of the iPod and the iPhone has fundamentally changed the way that the world, or certainly the Western world, interacts with its surroundings. I mean, look at what happened when the iPhone was released. Personally speaking, I thought it was going to be a massive white elephant. I thought the iPhone would be a niche product for a small sector of society. Boy, was I wrong. He invented the smartphone, or at least developed the smartphone to the point where it was needed by any self-respecting tech head. He did the iPhone, and it was so massively popular that everybody had to do it. And that has changed the way the human race, or the human race of the developed world, interacts with its surroundings. The ability to instantly access the internet on a mobile device, and the ability to play music and record video and take photos on a phone, has changed the world. This one company, Apple, under the leadership of Steve Jobs, changed the way we view phones. It changed the way we view music. It opened the world for independent audio and video content producers like me. Without Apple, the world would be an incredibly different place. And it's down to the vision and the drive of Steve Jobs. From what I've read of Steve Jobs, he wasn't necessarily a particularly nice person, but very few CEOs are. I think it's kind of ironic that Steve Jobs was a self-professed Buddhist and vegetarian, and yet it's his rival, Bill Gates, who spent all his money on charitable causes, whereas Steve Jobs pretty much kept it all. I mean, and I've said in the past that I'm not an Apple fanboy. In fact, on this very podcast a few months back, I called Steve Jobs a serpent. But that still doesn't change the fact that without Apple, without iTunes, without the iPod, without the iPhone, the world would be fundamentally different. And let's not forget that without Steve Jobs' investment, Pixar wouldn't exist either. The man has had such a massive influence on the culture and the technology and the entertainment of our world, that it just boggles the mind to think that this one person at the head of this one company has had such a widespread and massive influence. He changed communication, he changed films, he changed music, or the music industry. And whatever I feel about him personally, and whatever his personality was like, 56 is far too young an age to leave this world. But he has left this world a fundamentally different, and I think a fundamentally better, place to be. So rest in peace, Steve Jobs. You are one of the few people who can genuinely say that they have changed the world. Well, there's no easy way to come out of that, so I'm just going to carry on. The next track I've got for you is a return to the show for the Paper Scissors. I've played them a couple of times in the past, and here's a track off their last album, In Loving Memory. They come from Sydney in Australia, and have a slightly folky tinged rock sound. I mean, it's kind of a hard rock sound, but there's a quirky undercurrent under there. It's a really cool sound, and I really like their music. So, from Sydney in Australia, this is The Paper Scissors with their track, Lung Sung.
I look up and give a scratch to my hair. I give up and let these things fall down like rocks and stones and heavy frowns. What's up? Was it you or I got here in the first place? So drink up. Let us drown our sorrows and never come up.
Have here?
Oh, we got both kinds. We got country and western.
Hold back the cavalry that's charging me today. I got my ear to the ground, deliver hoofbeat sound. curse the day. Keep all your charity.
And there's another play for Ravishers, who come from Portland in Oregon, with their track Happening, which comes off their self-titled debut album, which was 3 years in the making. And when I first played them, they were calling themselves Dominic Castillo and the Rock Savants. But now they're called Ravishers. They're based in Portland, Oregon. Although Sean O from the Gemini Dragon podcast informs me that Dominic Castillo was originally from San Luis Obispo, which is where Sean O's from, which is kind of cool. There's something about the Ravishers which just gets me, and I do really like that track, Happening. So after my unexpected and impromptu rant about Frankie Kokoza and the Goo Goo Dolls last week, I had two people get in touch with me and make comments about it. And trust me, in the almost 5 years, Christ, in the almost 5 years I've been doing this podcast, that's pretty much the most feedback about one subject I've ever had. I think the only thing that rivals it was when I started talking about bigger women and how expecting people to be thin and have big breasts was unrealistic, whereas bigger women with bigger breasts were more natural and yet were marginalised in the media. Yeah, that was slightly unexpected how much feedback I got about that. But I did get two people get in touch with me about Frankie Kokoza, The X Factor and the Goo Goo Dolls. I got a comment on my blog page from Rowley from the Dark Compass podcast, and he makes some interesting points. He says, "You are right that good songs are getting into the charts for the wrong reasons. I feel the whole X Factor thing is wrong, just wrong. Building people's hopes up and dashing them. The record companies have found a cheap way of finding good talent from around the world and exploiting them." And yeah, I think that sums up my feelings about the X Factor. I remember when I did my podcast for Rage Against the Machine for Christmas that I worked out how many people were still in their contracts after winning Pop Idol or the X Factor. And it was about 2 out of 7. Unfortunately, that's another thing which has fundamentally changed the music industry, is the X Factor and Pop Idol. So as well as Steve Jobs, I think, unfortunately, Simon Cowell can claim to have changed the music industry. But unlike Jobs, I think in Cowell's case, it's definitely, definitely for the worse. And on Facebook, I had a comment on my wall from Caroline from the Bugcast, and it's always nice to hear from Caroline. She says, "Ha ha ha ha, effin' Muppet." Definitely a good thing happening for a bad reason. It's good that the Goo Goo Dolls are getting some play. Stonking track. The X Factor version was nowhere near as good. Love, love, love your reaction. Made my night. Frankie seems to have gotten more attention due to having 6 girls' names tattooed above his bum. He claims they are his conquests. They all disagree. Again, you effin' Muppet. Is about right. Yeah, I wasn't aware of this whole tattoo thing, but I think that makes me think even less about Frankie Kokoza, if that was at all possible. Irritating little git. But according to the odds I saw in the Radio Times of all places, Frankie Kokoza is not actually the favourite anymore, so hopefully his travesty version of Iris will not be released as a single. And in the end, if you're interested, Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls eventually ended up as number 3 in the UK Top 40, which is brilliant for such a beautiful song, even if it was 13 years too late. And I'm still deeply aggravated that it took the X Factor to get this awesome song noticed.
What ho, my good man! I would like to talk to your master about Weird Track of the Week!
Well, I'll ask him, but I don't think he'd be very interested. We've already got one, you see. It's out in back, it's very nice too. Now go away, or I will taunt you a second time!
This is a track I have been itching to bring you for quite some time. I first came across it about 3 years ago, when this video went viral, and I really liked it then. But it wasn't until I heard it played on an old episode of Dark Compass, which I've been working my way through. I'm still only into January of 2011. But I heard it played on Dark Compass, or I heard this artist played on Dark Compass, and I realised that all the music was available as a legal free download. So I jumped on the chance to download it, and I've been counting down the weeks until it was time to actually play the track. It's by Symphony of Science, who is John D. Boswell from Bellingham in Washington State. And what he did was take some footage of Carl Sagan from his seminal documentary series Cosmos, and also some footage of Stephen Hawking from his documentary series Universe. Symphony of Science took that and auto-tuned it. And this video of Carl Sagan being auto-tuned went viral about 3 years ago and was very, very popular. And indeed, this track has been released as a 7-inch single by Jack White's Third Man record label. Auto-tuning has become a popular viral meme for videos. I mean, Auto-Tune the News is still going on, and all these parodies of Kanye West and things like that using Auto-Tune. It is a popular method of getting your videos to go viral. But in pretty much every case of Auto-Tune, it's being used as a method of mockery or parody. But in this case, I think Symphony of Science is just doing it to create some beautiful music, but at the same time, promote the idea of scientific thought and scientific reasoning. I mean, and that is one of the stated aims of Symphony of Science on their website, is to promote the idea of science, which is brilliant, but it's also brilliant because the music is really good and I really like it. If you go to the Symphony of Science website, you get a link to their Bandcamp page where you can download all of the auto-tuned music he's done from various different angles, various different people, various different documentaries. All of it sounds really good, and it's all available on a pay what you like basis. So without further ado, here is Symphony of Science with the original, and in my opinion, still the best. This is A Glorious Dawn. See you next time, and remember, good music is infinite.
I'm not very good at singing songs, but here's a try.
From scratch, you must first invent the universe.
Space is filled with a network of wormholes.
You might emerge somewhere else in space,
somewhere else in time.
The sky calls to us. If we do not destroy ourselves, we will one day venture to the stars. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. The rising of the Milky Way.
The cosmos is full beyond measure. Elegant truths of exquisite interrelationships of the awesome machinery of nature.
I believe our future depends powerfully on how well we understand this cosmos, in which we float like a mote of dust. Morning sky.
And the brain does much more than just recollect. It intercompares, it synthesizes, analyzes, it generates abstractions.
The simplest thought, like the concept of the number one, has an elaborate logical underpinning. The brain has its own language for testing the structure and consistency of the world. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rose. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. A rising of the Milky Way. The sky calls to us. If we do not destroy ourselves, we will one day venture to the stars.
For thousands of years, people have wondered about the universe. Did it stretch out forever, or was there a limit? From the Big Bang to black holes, from dark matter to a possible Big Crunch, our image of the universe today is full of strange-sounding ideas.
How lucky we are to live in this time, the first moment in human history when we are, in fact, visiting other worlds. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. A rising of the Milky Way. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. A rising of the Milky Way.
The surface of the Earth is the shore of the cosmic ocean. Recently, we've waded a little way up, and the water seems inviting.
You have been listening to Colin and the Ouroboros podcast. Good music is infinite.